It's known as the most notorious crime in bodybuilding, the murder of Ray McNeil by his own wife, on Valentine's Day, no less. Did she really snap over some expensive chicken? Or was it due to years of his cheating and beating? This is the true crime story of Sally McNeil, the Lady Quadzilla, who took revenge on her Tyrannosaurus Flex husband. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Wonderful to see you today if you're joining me for the first time, and thank you, as always, to those of you who find it in your heart to watch every video. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Professional bodybuilder and native Jamaican Ray McNeil was supposedly celebrating Valentine's Day 1995 at the Price Club Warehouse store in Oceanside, California, about halfway between LA and San Diego. The South Beach Pro Invitational was coming up in 4 days, and Ray wanted to get pumped up on protein. Not that there was any bit of him left that needed pumping. He arrived back at the apartment he shared with his bodybuilder wife, Sally, and her two kids at about 10:30 p.m. The only problem was that Sally knew the Price Club had closed at 8:30. Ray McNeil had met Sally Loden in the Marine Corps, where they both served as sergeants while stationed together near San Diego. Sally was a member of the track and field and powerlifting teams in the Marines and was a real powerhouse of a woman. She'd go on to win the 1990 U.S. Armed Forces Championships in bodybuilding. She was previously married and had 3 children, but her relationship with her first husband was described as a stormy 4 years. They divorced in 1986, the same year Sally put her newborn up for adoption. I'm guessing that she didn't want to be a single mother with a brand new baby. She and Ray McNeil married the next year, 1987, after only a few months of dating, when Sally was 27 and Ray was 23. Things weren't so smooth between them right from the beginning, because apparently Ray had a wandering eye, and it landed on both men and women. They were known to have violent arguments. Sally was soon demoted from her rank in the military because of poor performance, and to make matters worse, she wasn't allowed to re-enlist when her time came. So she turned to that age-old profession of women down on their luck. You know the one I mean. Yes, of course, giving private wrestling lessons to men. She branded herself Killer McNeil to sell more lessons in what was either a weird coincidence or a prediction that she later took it upon herself to fulfill. Killer McNeil even made a wrestling video prophetically called Time to Die. Now, I didn't know anything about these quote-unquote wrestling lessons before I started looking into this case. Apparently, it's also known as muscle worship or apartment wrestling, these recorded sessions where a muscular person is paid to let someone touch them in what's probably a, you know, suggestive way meant to titillate the senses. The little men who worship female bodybuilders are known as schmoes, and they let the ladies put them in all sorts of compromising positions while the two grapple. And there's probably some muscle licking and some muscle kissing involved. Tell me if I'm the only person who wasn't aware of this. Sally was making just enough money from her schmoes that her husband, Ray, was able to devote himself full-time to bodybuilding. The very next year, he won his International Federation of Bodybuilders Pro card at the North American Championships, and the year after that, he was able to compete in 10 professional shows. And he was on the upswing, winning 2nd place at Niagara Pro, which got him into the International Mr. Olympia competition, the same competition that launched the careers of people like Terminator Arnold Schwarzenegger and Incredible Hulk Lou Ferrigno. Maybe taking a note from them, he decided to start taking acting lessons in the hope of becoming a stand-up comedian. Sally made sure the family was fed while Ray did free stand-up gigs. It seems like she was just so in love that she supported Ray's dreams even if he couldn't support her and the kids. And, of course, she understood the draw of wanting to be a pro bodybuilder. She was becoming one herself. In 1994, she entered 3 national and North American contests, placing as high as 5th. But it wasn't all perfectly shaved pecs and oiled up delts for the couple when Sally had to keep looking the other way on Ray's infidelities. At a bodybuilding show in 1990, Sally saw a woman Ray was having an affair with, threw her to the ground, and just wailed on her face before being pulled off.
See these biceps? I can curl 120 pounds for 10 reps. So just think what I can do to your neck.
And that wasn't Sally's only public display of violence. In 1993, she was dancing on a bar when a bouncer asked her to get down. She instead kicked him in the face 3 times. When the cops responded, She said she was going to kill them as they tried to get her under control. But despite all of this pent-up rage, people said that there was a kind of sweetness between Sally and her husband, Ray. He always talked her up in interviews that were supposed to be about him, and he was the one who mentored her when she got that fifth-place finish. When Ray's promoters paid for him to fly around Europe, but the family could only afford for Sally to take trains between cities to be with him, he'd be waiting for her at the station when she arrived. But just about 40 minutes after Ray left the grocery store on Valentine's Day 1995, the local police were responding to the 911 call from Sally. They found 30-year-old Ray with wounds to his face and stomach. He'd been shot with a shotgun. The district attorney's story goes that Ray was cooking chicken in the kitchen, and Sally was upset that the chicken was too expensive for a couple trying to make ends meet on wrestling lessons alone. Never mind that Ray had spent 3 hours supposedly shopping for that chicken and conveniently bought it at a store closer to one of his mistresses. So Sally loaded up her 12-gauge shotgun with the pistol grip in the bedroom and shot Ray in his midsection. And then she went back to the bedroom, reloaded, and came back to fire one into his face. The first shot ruptured 3 ribs and so much of his liver that almost a pound of it was blown off. There was a hole in his diaphragm you could stick your fist through, and his liver was hanging out. The shot through his head shattered Ray's jaw and made mincemeat of part of his tongue. He was on his hands and knees, apparently lamenting, "Why? Oh God, why?" And I'm sorry to be so graphic, but the point of this is that there was no way for Ray to make it out of this alive. He died 2 hours later while in surgery. Sally's 11-year-old daughter and 9-year-old son had been sleeping, but came out from their bedrooms, saw the bedlam, and then ran out of the house and into the parking lot screaming. Sally called 911, covered Ray with a blanket, and told the operator, "I just shot my husband because he just beat me up." The 911 operator would later testify that she heard a moaning male voice ask, "Why did you shoot me?" And Sally said, "I told you that I wasn't taking your shit anymore." She handed her shotgun over to a neighbor and told him the same thing, that Ray had been hitting her. Her story was that when Ray came home, she was in the bathroom putting on makeup because she wanted to go to a nightclub. Ray didn't want her to go out looking so good because it might mean meeting someone else. So he hit her, choked her, and she was only acting in self-defense. When an officer responded, he said that Ray was in a pool of blood but could still mumble a little. Sally told him that Ray had been beating her, and Ray looked at the officer, shook his head, and said, "No." To this, Sally says, "How could Ray talk without a mouth?" At trial, which coincidentally happened a year later on Valentine's Day, things didn't look great for Sally. The district attorney said this wasn't self-defense. It wasn't even a crime of passion. It was a premeditated murder by a woman who wanted to punish her husband for preparing to leave her. Everyone already knew Ray's history of cheating and Sally's history of beating his mistresses, so it wasn't too far-fetched. The DA said she did it for the life insurance money. The fact that there was a spent shell casing found in the bedroom made that theory all the more likely. It seemed fishy that a woman fearing for her life would run back to the bedroom to reload and then come back out again. Sally says she reloaded in the living room, and someone must have kicked the shell casing from the living room into the bedroom. But people who saw the scene said their house was so cluttered that a shell would never have made it all the way from the living room to the bedroom with just a kick. It also didn't help that the first officer on the scene said Sally didn't have any blood on her, no marks at all that would indicate that she was being choked by Ray, and he didn't have any of her DNA under his fingernails. At first, Sally said that the rumor about Ray preparing to leave her was a lie, but the DA got her to admit that, okay, she was giving him crap that night about not being ripped enough for the invitational that was coming up. And yes, she may have also mentioned that she was done with his dalliances with other women. But finally she said, okay, yeah, he was going to leave me. The prosecutor in the case said, "The defendant is anything but a battered wife. She is one of the most violent persons I've ever prosecuted." In March 1996, Sally McNeil was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 15 years to life in prison, plus 4 years for the use of a firearm. Now, immediately the media wanted to call it roid rage. The term had risen to popularity in the mid-80s when there seemed to be a series of crimes by bodybuilders that were overly violent and reactionary. Doctors and researchers aren't totally aligned on the stereotype of, like, the Incredible Hulk ripping open his shirt at the drop of a hat, but there is some evidence that testosterone fuels aggression, and steroids work because they mimic testosterone. The toxicology report on Ray came back positive for 5 different anabolic steroids, and Sally tested positive for 1. She saw this as another mark against her husband. She said, "Ray got the best steroids and I got the leftovers." But even if we don't blame their drug use, there was a lot of stress in the McNeil household. Ray was a cheater, and that made Sally jealous. She was, in the eyes of the muscle community, degrading herself with these wrestling lessons with the schmoes to make Ray's dreams come true. And all the while, he couldn't just come home to her at night. And even with her doing that kind of work, they didn't have enough money for her to even ride in a plane next to him on a wrestling tour. Maybe all of her muscles were meant to hide the hurt she had inside. In prison interviews, Sally said that she suffered injuries that were never mentioned in court, but would have helped her case. She claimed that Ray was an insecure, jealous man who lived in fear that Sally would leave him for someone better. She said he broke her toe throwing her out of a bathtub, broke her nose when she told him he'd hurt her during training, beat her up because she dated 2 other men before him. She lied to doctors about what happened to keep him from getting into trouble and lied to herself about how bad things were between them. She said that she tried to leave him 3 times, but he'd follow her.
Sally filed a temporary restraining order against her husband in 1990. She claimed he punched her and threw her around. But it wasn't long before Sally wanted Ray back.
She claimed that Ray did have roid rage, that when he beat her 52 times in 1 year, he wouldn't remember afterward what he did to her. But she says that the steroid found in her system after the murder was just residual from her previous competition. It stays in the system for 18 months sometimes, and she was really too focused on caring for her kids to spend money on new steroids for herself at that time. She said that a boyfriend of Ray's actually lived with them for almost 2 years, but because she asked Ray to make him move out, the man lied on the stand at her trial. She says she knows he saw Ray beat her over and over again, that once she begged him for help and he didn't lift a finger. Sally says her trial was unfair, that her defense wasn't able to present evidence of Ray's steroid use because roid rage is unproven. She was made out to be this aggressive provoker, but she says she was actually just worried he was going to kill her children that night, that he was acting like this Frankenstein's monster who was inhuman. One source I found did report that Sally's daughter heard a gurgling noise that night after Ray and her mom stopped shouting at each other, a noise that may have proven that Sally was being strangled. There were fingernail marks on Sally's neck the night of the murder, but when Ray's body was later exhumed, his fingernails were found to be too short to have made those marks. And again, there was no DNA under them. Some people view this as Sally having made the marks on herself, but she argues that if they were hers, they came from her trying to get Ray's hands off her neck. People say that she should have just run away or fought back, but she says that one time when she did hit back after one of Ray's beatings, he turned around and broke her rib and punctured her lung. She weighed 150 pounds at the time, and Ray was this 256-pound behemoth who could bench 500 pounds and run the 40-yard dash in 4.3 seconds. Sally says there was simply no escaping him, and she did what she had to do. Sally was born in Allentown, Pennsylvania, an area known for steel, but she entered the picture in 1960 when the U.S. steel industry was just about to hit a downward spiral, and she had a difficult childhood in a difficult town. Her first marriage was rife with cheating and beating, and her first husband says that Sally may not have ended up in prison if he treated her better and they'd stayed together. But he believed bodybuilding made her become unhinged and that he would have been the victim if Ray hadn't been. And it's true that she once pulled a gun on this ex and battered his windshield with a crowbar. Oh, and threw a VCR at Ray out of a window. And also some dumbbells another time. In 1990, the police came to investigate the well-being of her children, and Sally fought them off so hard that they had to spray her with mace. Nobody's saying she was an angel. But I'll say that researching this case, I was shocked at the way the media portrayed Sally back in the 90s. And I know that's naive of me, but wow, the stories called her a thug and a monster. They gave her cutesy nicknames like the Brawny Bride and the Pumped Up Princess. It really feels like we have the benefit of time on our side now, because back then at her trial, Sally's jury wasn't allowed to consider that she may have been suffering from battered women syndrome when deciding if her actions had been unreasonable. BWS can totally alter how a person perceives harm, making them hypersensitive to it. And this was a woman who had reportedly suffered regular beatings as a child and in both marriages. The prosecution's expert at the time said that, sure, Sally was a battered woman, but she was so assertive and aggressive that she was not the typical person with battered women syndrome, whatever that means. But the defense expert testified that battered women will often become aggressive as a defense mechanism. These days, the state of California now allows battered women syndrome to be considered when deciding the reasonableness of a crime. A limited series about Sally McNeil called Killer Sally premieres on Netflix on November 2nd, and her now grown kids seem to back up her story. In the trailer, her son says, "I remember how torturous it used to be to have to sit there and watch him abuse my sister and to know that I was next." I'd love to give you an update about what's going on with Sally these days, but her record is suspiciously missing from the California Department of Corrections website. My guess is that they have it locked due to her celebrity status. Her Wikipedia page says that she was paroled in May of 2020, but her interviews for the Netflix series sure look like they were shot in prison. So let's watch and find out. So what do you think? Do you believe that Sally was a battered woman who feared for her life that night? Or does it seem like she was taking the opportunity to pay her husband back for years of cheating and abuse? Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.